It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket and our fourth podcast in the series, Groundbreaking Events in Cricket, where we look at the incidents and events over the last 50 years or so that have had a really profound effect on the development of the game, the way it's evolved. And this week, having looked at things like the Six Sixes of Garfield Sobers and World Series Cricket and spin and Shane Warne and that ball, this week we're looking at the introduction of technology and how that has changed the game. Now, here's a question for you in an era when there are a lot of quizzes going on. Do you know which batsman was the first one to be given out via the use of the third umpire? Have a think about that. Who was it? It was Sachin Tendulkar. A rare moment when he was actually run out in a match against South Africa. The third umpire was Carl Liebenberg, and he gave him out in Durban on a TV replay. It was a brilliant piece of fielding actually by Jonty Rhodes, which caught Sachin Tendulkar short in 1992 in November. He was the first person to be given out by the third umpire. And actually, he was only run out, you know, in his test career five times, which so it was a fairly important moment for lots of reasons.
I'm going to take you back to a moment, slightly self-indulgently, when I played in a school match as a 13-year-old, when I asked my teacher, who was the standing umpire, why he'd not given out a batsman from the opposing school, LBW. I was bowling left arm over, it pitched on, the batsman had played right back. It was absolutely plumb, a point I made to the umpire, who then went absolutely mad at me on the field. He went absolutely ballistic. It was simply not the done thing to question an umpire's decision. Now batsmen are allowed to question the umpire's decision in international cricket, and no one bats an eyelid. It's an amazing transformation, really, in the game over the years. I should just say, that same umpire who gave my LBW not out, 2 days later, we were playing another school match on a Saturday, and a player from the opposing school, poor lad, he played a perfectly immaculate forward defensive shot, hit the middle of the bat. For some reason, our bowler appealed. Our umpire, the same teacher, gave him out, and he couldn't believe it. He walked off, and I couldn't, of course, recall him, because 2 days before, I'd questioned the umpire's decision. I certainly wasn't going to do it again.
Well, it just shows that these things sort of balance themselves out sometimes. Actually, funnily enough, while you mentioned school cricket, I remember once batting in a school game, and I spotted when I was on about 40, believe it or not, that there were three men behind square on the leg side. So I had a big slog at the next ball and got bowled. And the umpire said, oh dear, you know, I pointed to the fact there were three men behind square on the leg side, which obviously should have made it a no ball, and said to the umpire, you know, I'm not out. Look, there's three men behind square on the leg side. And he just said, you bugger off, you cocky little oik, you're out. So it didn't work, questioning the umpire's decision on that occasion. So anyway, it's a big subject, of course, that we're embracing here. And in this podcast, we'll ask, has the use of technology made the game fairer? Has it improved the game? Has it gone too far? And have we got the best system? We'll hear from two men who completely changed the way the game is played and also umpired. Simon Normington, who actually sort of invented the concept behind the DRS system, the red zone and the way the batsman's made transparent. And also Paul Hawkins, the man who invented Hawkeye. And later we'll hear from Test umpire Ian Gould, who gives an umpire's perspective on the use of technology. And also a guy, a batsman, a famous player, whose career very much straddled DRS. He started before it was invented and he then finished when it was very much part of the scene generally. That's Sir Andrew Strauss. And we'll hear about how he says DRS has influenced the game for both batsmen and captains.
We should differentiate between line decisions. You mentioned Sachin Tendulkar being given out in the early 90s, line decision, and player referrals, which came in much later. That's where the players could review decisions on the field. The formal DRS system to add player reviews was first used in a test match in 2008, although it was officially launched by the ICC in November 2009, a test match between New Zealand and Pakistan. It was first used in a one-day international in January 2011 and first used in a T20 international in October 2017. That's quite surprising, actually, that with T20 it wasn't used for so long, but it is in now in T20 internationals. And just a quote from former West Indies fast bowler Michael Holding, and now a very well-known television commentator, who said during the Oval Test match of 2009, he said, "Get ready for two-day tests if they use the predictive path of Hawkeye in the referral system." Well, we've had one or two short test matches, but we haven't had that many two-day test matches.
Well, they weren't two-day test matches because of Hawkeye either. They were two-day test matches because of the inadequacies of batsmen generally and also some fairly lively, fruity pitches too. Certainly not the blame of technology generally. And it's interesting how it's evolved, isn't it? I mean, actually, if you look at the way there have been more LBWs probably to spinners since the advent of Hawkeye and DRS, but I would say there have probably been less LBWs to faster bowlers because the bounce of the ball has been shown to be quite high for the likes of Stuart Broad and anybody over 6 foot. Their length ball is generally going over the stumps, whereas in the past we assumed that the ball hitting sort of, say, the batsman's pad roll, on his knee roll, was going to be hitting the wicket. The Hawkeye system, DRS, has proved that quite a lot of those deliveries are going over the top. So whereas faster bowlers are probably getting less LBWs, spinners who used to get denied LBWs because the umpire said, well, his pad's outside the line or he's playing a shot or it's going down the leg side, missing leg. You know, now more of those balls are shown to be hitting the stumps from the Hawkeye system. I'm going to go right back to the 1990s, actually, which is when all this began. And, you know, we've got this habit at the moment, this very popular habit of Thursday nights going outside and clapping essential staff, NHS staff and care home workers and so on, and applauding them for their work. It's a lot of unheralded heroes that are getting the credit at the moment. And I would say that this man we're going to hear from now, Simon Normington, is one of those, not in the sense that he's saved people's lives, certainly in a physical sense, but in cricket, he's had a huge influence on actually sometimes saving lives of batsmen and sometimes not, because he was the guy who thought up the idea of making a batsman transparent and also putting a strip of colour on the pitch artificially to try and give an indication of where the ball was pitching. Now, these tools were very much brought in initially for TV viewers only. Simon Normington was originally a cameraman who was brought into the Channel 4 team in 1999 to help with the visual look of the programme and help with graphics and things like that. And one of his first inventions and ideas was to create a way of making the batsman transparent so that you could see when the ball hit the batsman's pad where it might be going afterwards. So that was very much a sort of precursor to Hawkeye. And Simon Normington here tells us how he got the idea.
I was a cameraman in working in India in 93. I was at the far end at Chennai, Madras as it was then, and I was doing ball follow, so I wasn't really kind of involved in sort of LBWs and all that kind of thing. I had enough to kind of worry about. But I remember thinking, all this pitched outside leg business is kind of all very well, but it's not very well defined or explained. And there was one replay I saw where I'm thinking, I don't think that ball pitched outside leg. I'm not a great crowd of cricket buff, and I certainly wasn't at the time. I think I didn't really kind of know what the laws were exactly. So I kind of investigated a bit, and I remember talking to Charles Colville about it at the time. We're on a transporter plane going from one location to another. And I thought, what can we do to help this? What could we possibly do? Because it seems to me that it's all a bit kind of wishy-washy and kind of undefined. So I thought, if we had stump cameras, we needed a static camera, really, to draw a graphic line. What about if we drew a graphic line down the wicket, the area of wicket to wicket, which would effectively, you know, illustrate exactly where the line of leg stump was? I used to be a rostrum cameraman, which deals in graphics and special effects and things. And if you've got control over a camera, so and obviously you have when it's static, you can kind of do clever things like that. And I thought that would be one way to do it. It wasn't really until Gary Francis, the exec producer of Channel 4 Cricket, asked me to join him looking after graphics and innovation and production design, looking after the, making sure we've got the best out of the crew and the technology, that I thought, well, this could be one of our things. They came up with the idea of not using stump cameras, but putting cameras up high above the bowler's arm, the wicket to wicket kind of angle, the normal angle that you see, you know, for every delivery, but make those locked off and stationary. And not only that, but to make them super motion, these two cameras would be a, you know, great way to A, you know, show LBWs, and B, for us to be able to draw the red zone down the pitch. And that's what we did. My first worry was that we needed to be very accurate, because you're now doing something which had never been done before. And my first question, because I was kind of worried that we were either, I don't know, somebody was going to take offence at this and we're going to get something wrong with the laws of the game and stuff. So I kind of contacted anybody I could to find out, actually, the first question was, at what point is the ball said to actually pitch outside leg stump? And I remember going around, I remember showing it to you and Mark Nicholas and people. I used to sort of draw charts and say, listen, guys, if we're going to paint this thing down the pitch, we're going to have some explaining to do. We've got to be able to define at what point the ball is said to pitch out that outside leg stump. Because I remember Dickie Bird was the first guy we shot for the titles of Channel 4 Cricket 1999. And when I asked him, he didn't know what on earth I was talking about. He'd never heard of anything so ridiculous. He said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter, because nobody's ever asked that question before. Nobody can prove it anyway. So we've never asked ourselves that question. David Shepherd, the same. He just looked at me as if to think, well, I don't know, nobody's ever asked that question before. It's never come up. That's how it evolved. Thinking the frustration of not really being able to illustrate this well for the audience, for the commentators to be, you know, making a guess as the umpires were. And that really was quite a startling start, if you like, to the whole notion of being able to illustrate properly what's happening in the LBW department.
Then you moved on to making the batsman sort of half transparent. So
yes.
How did that evolve, and what actually is that technique?
Well, again, based on my kind of rostrum camera days, whereby the whole principle of a rostrum camera is that it's locked off and effectively under your control, and therefore you can do special effects, like you can do very clever mixes between one thing and another, and you can do split screens and all sorts of visual effects. And again, if you're dealing with a static camera, which we were, it just suddenly struck me. I was thinking, how can we progress the red zone to make it even more helpful in terms of whether the ball was going on to hit the stumps? Because that, at the end of the day, is obviously the question. And it just suddenly came to me that if we were to shoot the shot before anybody got on the pitch, so it was just somebody put the bails on, we've now got a blank picture from either end of the little red zone sort of scene, if you like, close on the wicket. If we shoot that before the game with nobody there and just the wicket, just the stumps themselves, and then we half mix that with the actual replay of somebody having an LBW decision judged, it would make the batsman and everything else actually transparent. We could actually see the stunts through the batsman. Surely that would be a great way of just getting a feel for whether that ball was going on to hit the stumps. It kind of gave it a 3D kind of scenario. So we did. My goodness me, it was startling. I was so excited. I remember when I saw the first replay. It was a very tricky thing to set up technically, but the vision mixer Kimmer and Yard, I remember, pulled the, you know, really made it work beautifully, and it did, and everybody loved it, and that in a sense was, I think, what triggered Paul Hawkins into thinking, right, yes, what we need next is for that ball to continue in a virtual way for us to really discover whether it was going to hit the wicket or not. So that was the evolution from the red zone to the transparent batsman to Paul Hawkins thinking, I think we could help them here.
I remember when we first tried that transparent batsman actually on Channel 4, and you know, everyone was kind of quite agog at the idea that we could suddenly see where the ball was going or where it might be going, because we could see the batsman's stumps behind his leg. And it not only wowed the viewers and some of the commentators actually, it also got some scientists thinking as well, one of whom was Paul Hawkins. Paul was a minor counties batsman who often, I think, felt aggrieved at LBW decisions he'd suffered in amateur cricket. And I think seeing very much what was going on Channel 4 coverage gave him the idea for Hawkeye. And he explains how the idea came about very much on the back of an interview he did on TMS.
Hawkeye started that. There was an innovation amnesty at Roke Manor Research, which is where I went to work for after leaving university, and I'd already had the idea of Hawkeye, but that was my platform to propose it. And I was given £5,000 to do some basic feasibility of the idea of Hawkeye, and cricket was the focus, with Channel 4 having taken over the cricket rights and lots of new innovations already having come in, yourself, the red zone, snickometer, and so we felt the time was right. The Skies and the Channel 4s had all said, we love it, you develop it, and then we'll see whether we want to go ahead with it, but we're not paying for the development. My breakthrough came that through a friend that I was at university with, I managed to get myself a slot or a test match special at Trent Bridge. This would have been 99.
Okay, so New Zealand.
And there'd been several controversial umpiring decisions over the series to date. And so it was topical. And came on lunchtime at Trent Bridge with Jonathan Agnew. And during the lunchtime interval, it started to rain. So what would have been a couple of minutes radio interview during the break ended up being an hour and a half on air talking about it. And they opened up the phones and had people phoning in and what would it be like for the game. And it was generally positive. And obviously the press then picked up on it the following day and more media off the back of that. And that was really the catalyst for change, that it was a competitive landscape within the production of cricket. Sky had the one day as Channel 4 had the test matches, and they realised from the publicity, if they didn't, the other one would. And we had from having no offers to fund the development to having two offers to fund the development, probably within the space of two or three days after that publicity. So Jonathan Agnew, whilst he's not the biggest fan of Hawkeye, he's actually, you know, a very big catalyst for it happening in the first place.
What was the kind of turning point? I mean, because obviously now it's, you know, widely acclaimed in various different sports, or many different sports. But what was the kind of crucial move into making it available for the umpires and then as a review mechanism? Was it tennis that brought it to that level?
Well, I think all sports, it's been the governing body led, firstly, and generally they've been reactive to big controversial moments. So in tennis, it was Serena Williams, Jennifer Capriati quarterfinal at the US Open, which was a highly controversial match. Bad line calls cost Serena the match. So that was a catalyst for change for tennis wanting technology. I suppose it's a bit more of a drip. There wasn't one single moment in cricket, but just the continuous technology showing the umpire and, you know, the story moving away from the match and the players. And I suppose cricket having seen how tennis have benefited from it, I think was the catalyst for change for cricket coming on board. Football was, you know, the Frank Lampard goal or non-goal against Germany in the World Cup 2010, which, you know, previous to that, it was pretty clear they were, you know, not going to use technology. So the key sports has been a controversial moment. That's been the single biggest change. And then I suppose us having the credibility and the reputation that if as a sport they did want to use technology, technology would be there and reliable, accurate enough that it wouldn't let the sport down. The other thing I say about that is I think the key thing for becoming used for the officiating was we were lucky that the first sport to adopt it being tennis had the added advantage of not being useful for officiating, but also having the extra entertainment value of the crowd really getting into the challenge system and Wimbledon clapping and US Open doing their oohs. So that entertainment value sort of made it a no-brainer to a certain extent.
And how many sports is it used in now?
27 sports we now do. That we added Cornish jousting to the list of sports last summer, which was real one that not many people would be getting at the quiz night. We were so lucky in the early days in so many different ways. You know, our tracking was okay, but obviously not as good as it is now. Our graphics were really poor compared to what they are now, so the number of stories we could tell, and we weren't as reliable, but we had the best cricket director in the world. We had a ridiculously good commentary team, probably the best quality team, and of course also we had Shane Warne and Glenn McGrath, one turning it square, the other landing on a sixpence. So you had bowlers that were easy to tell Hawkeye stories about. So, you know, it was really the best in class in all aspects in the early days of Hawkeye.
I think one of the interesting things there, listening to Paul Hawkins, is the fact that, and a lot of people said it at the time, they said this Hawkeye system is flawed. And there was a lot of debate about it, saying we can't use this system. It's not 100%. Paul Hawkins actually, I think, admitting that you know, there were some problems at the start. He said, what did he say? It was okay at the start, and now it's really good. I think he's accepted there has been, you know, a great deal of improvement over the years, and there are still people who say, oh, that didn't look right, that really didn't. But I remember at the time there was that feeling that, you know, this doesn't look quite right, and perhaps there were some that were wrong. But having said that, and this goes back to the whole sort of fundamental point of why we have DRS in the first place, you think of how many umpires have given poor decisions. The umpires are guessing. When people say, oh yeah, but you've got to stick with the umpire, the umpires are just guessing. It's just an informed opinion. It's no more than that. Okay, you do your years in the middle and you hope to be a decent umpire. But I'm the number of times I've been watching on television over the years before we've had DRS, I thought, that's a horrendous decision. That's missing. That's going over the top. So you've got to remember, you know, even though the Hawkeye system was possibly flawed at the start, you know, did not give you that real accuracy that perhaps there is now, umpires were still making stacks and stacks of mistakes.
Yeah, I remember the first time we got a look at Hawkeye, and Paul Hawkins had approached Channel 4, as he said, and invited us down to this research facility in Hampshire. And we turned up, Mark Nicholas and I and a couple of other producers turned up, and we were sort of taken to this what looked like a tennis court with a bowling machine set up to bowl at effectively a cardboard cut out of a batsman who was stood in front of a wicket. And there were cameras sort of mounted that were just fairly cheap looking CCTV cameras mounted either side of the bowling machine, and they were all wired up to a computer inside a little tent. And two or three scientists or technicians were sitting inside this tent watching the deliveries being bowled at this cardboard batsman hitting his leg and then kind of going on to hit the stumps, and then they were tracking the ball as a result. And we were looking at those thinking, well, you know, this looks really interesting. And we then tried it in a match at Lord's, a county game. We set it all up. We had all the wires going into a little transit van at the back of the nursery end. And actually, we were amazed. It was a proper game, and we were amazed that some of the balls that Angus Fraser was playing in that match and some of the balls he was bowling, we were thinking, surely that was hitting, and it was showed to be going down the leg side or going over the top of the stumps or whatever. So it was quite revealing, really, that more balls from a faster bowler were missing and then more balls from a spinner were hitting. I feel sorry, actually, for somebody like John Embry, who was a predecessor at Lord's, obviously played for Middlesex for a long time, a spinner, bowled absolutely dead straight, wicket to wicket, and hardly ever got any LBWs, and he used to go off the field at the end of the day's play, rucking about, oh, bloody umpires, blind as a bat, you know, can't give me LBWs and all that. He would certainly have got a lot more if Hawkeye had come into existence during his career. And we told the story last week, didn't we, about Shane Warne and how he realised from Hawkeye's revelations on TV, that if he bowled more straight balls with the batsman's technique using the pad and the bat close together, he could get or convince the umpires to give more LBWs than they were. And gradually that cottoned on even before DRS was invented.
Yeah, and one of the other points here is that, you know, as television has improved, the quality of television pictures have improved. You know, we see and have seen far more starkly the injustices served against bowlers and batsmen. You know, you think of, you know, batsmen who've nicked the ball onto their pad or whatever, and, you know, also ones where it is going to go down the leg side or going to go over the top. And I think that's the point, is that sitting at home watching on television, it just felt ridiculous. I mean, and, you know, football's in that situation now. You think of, you know, they're dealing with VAR, but you think of something like 1966 and England's third goal in the World Cup final. I mean, even now, the pitches are not there to really work out whether that ball was over the line or not. You know, England fans say it was, Germans are bored to say it wasn't. But of course, when Frank Lampard scored that goal against Germany in the World Cup in South Africa, the quality of picture and the fact there were more cameras in the ground clearly showed the ball was well over the line. So sort of television has showed to the sport, it's shown up the imperfections. And so it was almost, in a way, it's irresistible, really. You have to go to the technology because it just became absurd. You know, batsmen, I remember Kevin Peterson in a test match against Pakistan at Headingley, I think got an inside edge onto his pad, the ball went to slip, Pakistan appealed, it was given not out. He was on 9 at the time, went on to make 100. And it sort of felt absurd, really, because everybody who watched the TV pictures knew he was out, and yet he survived and went on to make an important 100 in the game. It was that sort of thing that just, to me, just became ridiculous. And the more television improved, the more obvious the mistakes were. So it just had to happen. You had to have a DRS system.
Yeah, you're quite right. And actually, you know, there were arguments against it, weren't there? They were saying, oh, it's not fair on the umpire. You know, we shouldn't use technology because the umpire's shown up and so on. But I mean, if you've got the technology, you might as well use it, really. And what was seemed always a bit ridiculous was that at times the TV viewer got a better impression of what had happened than the people in the stadium, who paying all the money to watch the test match or whatever, were not seeing the big screen replay of Hawkeye, because that wasn't allowed to be used because it would embarrass the umpire. So only the TV viewers at home got the full picture, and that just seemed absurd. And then the players were sort of watching it in the dressing room and sort of looking aggrieved that, you know, that you'd get players in the batting team sort of coming out onto the balcony and telling a batsman to go back because he wasn't out, or, you know, telling them, trying to impress on the batsman to stay there. You know, it became a bit chaotic, really. So it was quite right in the end to introduce an official system where the players could actually refer it or review it to the umpire. And that has had a huge impact on the game generally and on sport generally.
So we've heard how the technology developed over the years into the system that we've got now. What about those people who actually have to use it, implement it, the umpires and the players themselves? We're going to hear from Ian Gould in just a moment and from Sir Andrew Strauss as well, because everyone has had to adapt, umpires and players.
Yeah, and in fact, of course, it's influenced all sport as well. And in a way, Hawkeye, having been introduced into cricket and very much revolutionised the way that cricket was watched and assessed as well, seeing the ball projecting into the future where the ball might have gone if it hadn't hit the pad. Then line technology became introduced via Hawkeye into tennis, and the review system of players being able to review a line decision. Tennis was the first place where that was used, and I think that probably convinced cricket that it had to come in eventually to cricket. Obviously, cricket is more complicated because, as well as there being those line decisions like runouts, which were now being automatically referred to the third umpire, there were these projections into the future, and also snickometer, the ultra edge technology as well, showing that an inside edge had been detected that would help the umpire again make a decision, or the third umpire make a decision. So there was a few things that came together which gradually introduced the idea of decision review system.
We posed the questions at the start about, you know, whether this has made the game fairer, has it improved the game, and have we got the best system? And that's a very valid question to ask, isn't it? You know, have we got the best system? Is there a way of improving the system? I mean, or is it just bit by bit, as has happened with the DRS system over the years? Things have improved. I can remember, for example, being at the Sydney Cricket Ground in the 2010-11 series. Ian Bell got a feather through to the keeper, and it was overturned. They couldn't quite work it out. I'm pretty sure that Ian Bell nicked it, and I'm sure if you talked to him, he would admit he nicked it. But he went on to make 150. You know, there have been problems, little problems over the years, and big moments over the years that have probably gone the wrong way. I mean, are there improvements that still can be made to the system, or is this it now? This is where we are.
I think it's pretty good, isn't it? I think there were problems, you're right, particularly associated with Hotspot, because Hotspot was one of those laser technologies which didn't always work. It seemed like when it was a very hot day, it didn't pick up those tiny edges. There were rumours of batsmen putting bits of tape down the side of their bats to stop Hotspot from detecting little edges, and a lot of the batsmen tried to get away with it as well. Whereas now they're using Ultra Edge in collaboration with very high definition cameras, so you can match the two up much more effectively. And I think that I think the technology now is foolproof. They're using much higher definition cameras for Hawkeye as well. They started, as I said, with CCTV cameras, which were fairly primitive, but now these cameras are filming at 3 times a normal camera speed, so they're very, very slow motion, so every tiny little movement of the ball or little potential edge can be picked up in association with the stump microphones. It is a pretty sophisticated system.
What about the sort of nature of the game? Has it undermined the game? I mean, those critics of the DRS system and technology say it's completely changed the way the game's played. You know, there's less deference now. Umpire's word used to be final, and people liked that. They liked the sort of tradition of the game. I mean, I think my feeling about that is actually cricket has always been at the sort of forefront of revolution and change. And this series, actually, that we're doing, it has shown that. Cricket has always adapted, has always changed. I mean, the latest change, which people were up in arms about, and talk about tradition, was putting numbers and names on the back of players' shirts at test matches. I mean, that was a relatively small thing. Now, I always thought that was strange, actually, that people really railed against that, when actually in the last 20 years, you know, you've been able to question an umpire's decision, which, as we started with, when I told you that story about when I was a 13-year-old, you know, it was unthinkable all those years ago that you would question an umpire's decision. But, you know, cricket has always been at the forefront of change, and this idea of sort of balancing change and tradition.
It's a strength of the game, I think, actually. It's one of cricket's great sort of survival mechanisms. You know, it's one of the oldest sports in existence, and it still has the rudimentary basics of the pitch, the ball and the bat are all exactly the same, but there have been so many innovations over the years. I mean, the umpire has, I suppose, been slightly diminished in his role in international cricket when all the TV cameras and all the technology is there. And I think that probably the one problem, I think it's made the test match, the international game, better, because it's fairer. The batsmen and the bowlers get their just desserts because of the technology. Of course, the problem comes now when you get amateur cricket and batsmen and bowlers wanting to contradict umpires' decisions at that level of the game. And actually, Paul Hawkins has quite an interesting idea, which we can talk about another time, about umpires in amateur cricket having mobile phones that can actually replay incidents and even pick up edges and be able to project the path of balls in LBW decisions and so on, so that in the future, even amateur umpires will have some of that technology at their disposal. For the moment, it's just professional umpires. And one who has very much had to embrace the new technology and the introduction of the DRS is Ian Gould, old colleague of mine actually at Middlesex, was a very good cricketer in his own right and a brilliant umpire who all the players love. And he's really positive about the introduction of DRS, but he said it wasn't that easy when it started.
Yeah, I can remember it. It's a bit like if you're going through what the football referees are going through at the moment with VAR. I mean, we were seeing things that
Even in your playing day, Simon, if you bowl round the wicket to a left-hander, you had no chance of getting an LBW. But once Hawkeye came in, you know, the lines and the math side of it suddenly said it was smashing the stumps. And that was difficult to take at the time, because it was all right for me because I had only just started umpiring. I really wasn't long in the tooth of it. But, you know, I think one or two of the older guys really struggled with it. I'm not to say that I didn't struggle with it. It was a lot of things that, you know, were put in front of you that you just never, ever seen playing cricket anywhere. But it was difficult to download in your mind.
Can you remember the first time a decision you gave was overruled or overturned?
Yeah, I can remember a couple of them. It was very early on as well. That again was a right-arm bowler bowling around the wicket. I gave it not out. No, it's going down the leg side, or it's pitched. It's hit him outside the off stump, pitched in line, smacking halfway up middle. You know, and you suddenly see that on the big screen, and you're thinking, "Wow, you know, I need to adjust to this."
And did you? Did it affect you?
Yeah, it did. It did at first because it's a bit strange saying this, but you're almost playing the machine. What was the machine thinking? So it warped your mind for a little while. But then when you worked it out, you worked your angles out a little bit better because you saw more of it. And your predictive path in your mind became stronger and wiser. So, you know, you just went with it. You know, we fought it for 3 years. We never thought it would last. We thought it was a gimmick. Wasn't going to last, but here we are in 2020 with it rocking and rolling, and everyone loves it, absolutely loves it.
Including the umpires?
Yes, they do now. At the time, they didn't. I remember the famous semi-final in India.
Yeah, India, Pakistan, yeah.
You know, I gave Tendulkar out in the semi-final. And, you know, even in my humble opinion to this day, you know, I was still giving it out, but, you know, that then showed what Hawkeye was showing, what was happening. So, you know, I didn't see that. Not many people did see it on the day, but, you know, that's how it's evolved. It's moved on. We've moved on. The modern-day umpire accepts it now. The great thing about these modern-day umpires, and whatever anyone's going to tell me, these are the best 12 in the world at this present moment. There's one or two creeping up behind them, but they are exceptionally good. But one thing they're very, very good at is turning up on the ground with humour. But one thing they're very good at before they put all their kit on is they take their ego out and put it in their bag. And if they get proved wrong, they get proved wrong. But they don't get proved wrong too often, to be fair to them.
What's it like when you're umpiring now then and you haven't got DRS, you know, when you're, say, doing a county match or something? I mean, is it quite weird?
It's difficult because there's run-outs and things like this that you've forgotten about because, all, you know, if there's a run-out in a test match or a one-day international or a T20, you just make a square and send it up to your third umpire. But I remember doing a game last year, just after I retired, did a championship game, and there was a run-out. And I nearly fluffed it completely because I wasn't really totally concentrating on it. Now, suddenly, this is my decision, not the third umpire. So it is tricky. It is tricky going from one to the other, but I prefer to do every game under DRS now. Every game. That's county cricket, T20, 50 over. Because at the end of it, Simon, if you make a mistake, it can be rectified there and then. You know, I remember Mark Benson telling me a great story. It wasn't a great story for him at the time, but he gave Steve Fleming not out on naught, caught down the leg side, leg glance. Just, he had no chance. No umpire in the world would give it out. It's just rolled down the bat and gone to the keeper. He gave it not out. Well, you know what's coming next. Stephen Fleming got 220. So that's taken Stephen 7 hours. So he said Mark's had 7 hours of grief and childish remarks about him not giving this out. Nowadays, that doesn't happen.
Has it made it a better game, do you think?
I think it has, yeah. Yeah, it has. It's stopped a lot of animosity, a lot of infighting, you know. But the problem is now, to me, it's got to be worldwide. It's got to be in every single country for every single game. You can't go and do a game at Melbourne and you've got 37 cameras and then you go to Zimbabwe and you've got 8. You can't do that. That's wrong. You know, it's unfair to the players, it's unfair to the umpires, it's unfair to the game. So, you know, I think ICC within a certain period of time will make it mandatory that you've got to have a DRS.
Well, he speaks really well, Ian Gould. Fabulous character and a very good umpire as well. I was there that day, that remarkable day in Chandigarh in Mohali, that India-Pakistan semi-final when he gave Sachin Tendulkar out LBW. I didn't bat an eyelid. I thought, oh, that's out. No way, this is going to be overturned. I mean, there were all sorts of conspiracy theories at the time. I don't know whether they're true or not. Who knows? But, you know, it was overturned, much to the surprise, I think, of most people. Definitely Ian Gould. I think he was absolutely staggered by it. But there we go. You know, Tendulkar was reprieved. India went on to win that World Cup semi-final. I mean, all sorts of suggestions. Oh, they put the wrong replay on it and that sort of thing. I mean, you could make a case for it going down the leg side, I suppose. But I talked, you know, earlier about that there have been hiccups over the years and seeming anomalies. I mentioned the Ian Bell one. I mean, that felt like a strange overturn, but there we go. You know, sometimes to get where you want to go, you are inevitably going to have one or two incidents, one or two problems along the way.
It's great to hear that Ian Gould is fully embracing the DRS technology, given that his career sort of started right back in the 1970s. And by the way, he's got a book out, Gunner, My Life in Cricket, which is out this week, actually. So look out for that. Obviously, umpires have had to change the way they've approached umpiring the game, officiating the game in international level. One or two now are sort of almost reluctant, actually, to give certain decisions because they know they've got the fallback of technology. So I'm thinking particularly of the sort of no-balling situation where they're a bit nervous about calling a no-ball in case it isn't, knowing that if it is, it's going to be reviewed or, you know, at least assessed by the third umpire, who will catch up with a wicket which shouldn't have been off a no ball that wasn't called. So umpires have had to, you know, adapt, and so, of course, have players too. And it's interesting the impact that Hawkeye and DRS has had on batting techniques. And so Andrew Strauss is the perfect person to talk about that. He started his career in the late 90s and really had to completely change his method as a result of first Hawkeye and then DRS.
There was a bit of a step into the unknown for everyone when it was first introduced. So I think players generally were very supportive of the concept because we got used to seeing wrong decisions sort of shown up on television, really, because they were using Hawkeye and other devices to show that, you know, sometimes you'd be given out incorrectly and other times being given not out and actually you were out. So I think we were all quite supportive of the concept of it. And then it was a pretty short period of time before you realised that you did have to adapt your game quite substantially. Most importantly, against spin bowling, obviously. So there was almost a sort of convention there for quite a long time that if you had your bat and pad together and the ball sort of squeezed between the two, then the umpire would give you the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes if you're leaving the ball and it's hitting you outside off stump, but it was a sort of semi-leave or whatever. There were all sorts of things that you had to question whether in this new era would the technology see it the same way that umpires had seen it previously. And so, you know, very apparent very quickly that you had to play spinners with the bat and not the bat and the pad. So that meant you had to get the bat out in front of the pad rather than alongside the pad. And for a lot of players, that was fundamentally changing the way they, especially their defensive game against spin, actually.
How did it affect you?
Number one, I had to get my defence right before I could work out my attacking shots. And then number two, what were my new attacking shots? And so I started thinking a bit more about trying to score off the back foot against spin a bit more. And the obvious other really big consideration that people had to make was about sweeping the ball. So in the old days, again, you could get away with quite a few sweeps. These days, if the ball is on the stumps and you're trying to sweep the ball, then that's a much higher risk shot than it used to be in the past. I think the other thing that a lot of batsmen have done as a result, it wasn't as relevant to me, but it just effectively try and keep your front leg out of the way. So, you know, pushing that down the line of leg stump a little bit more, which gives you access to the ball, but then obviously, you know, it swings it in roundabouts, that gives you access to the ball, but obviously makes you more vulnerable to getting bowled and maybe nicking off, etc., to the spinners. So I think everyone had to work out what it meant for them individually and then reconstruct their game accordingly. Obviously, from a spinner's point of view, suddenly they had different ways of taking wickets. So in the old days, it used to be much more about spinning the ball past the bat. And now I think what spinners realised, and someone like Graham Swann was brilliant at this, is you had two methods. So Swann against left-handers is a great example. You know, almost every single time he beat the outside of the bat with one that turned past the edge of the left-hander's bat, he would follow one up with one that didn't turn as much or went straight on. So, you know, those balls that you think are going to turn and then they don't and they hit on the pad. You know, I mean, I can't begin to think how many wickets he got as a result of that. Almost a two-card trick. Turn one past the bat and then slide one on there. But, you know, there was still a lot of skill required because you had to have that variety. You had to be able to not give batsmen a show when the ball's not going to turn as much. And, of course, the bowlers that had variety in terms of turning it both ways were equally very effective. So it did rejuvenated spin bowling full stop, I think.
What about as a captain? How did it change? How did DRS change the role and habits of a captain?
I think from a captaincy point of view, there are a few things. The first one, obviously, was, you know, was understanding the review system and how best to use it. And that sort of evolved over time because, to begin with, it was all about the DRS only being there to overturn howlers. And then, you know, as a captain, you had to realise effectively when the umpire was going to get given the benefit of the doubt, in which case you're wasting a review, and when it's absolutely imperative that you did review a decision. So, you know, you had to come up with a bit of a plan of action, a system, I suppose, and how best to deal with that. And we had one with the England cricket team where it was effectively, if it was myself standing at first slip, Matt Prior, the wicketkeeper, and the bowler, and all three of us said we should review that, then we would. If one out of the three said, no, I don't think that's out, we generally wouldn't. And that served us quite well, actually. Tactically, I suppose it just allowed you to play around the fields a bit more for the spinners, I suppose. So getting the spinners to bring the stumps into play and giving batsmen an opportunity to play a shot that might get them out LBW. And I think what we found, for instance, is then a lot of captains started bringing the sweep man up on the one much more than they had done in the past. So effectively saying to a batsman, go on, you know, someone like Graham Swann, a left-hander, he's bowling a lot stump to stump. Yes, you can sweep, and if you sweep, you'll get a boundary for it. But we pretty much know that if you miss it, you're going to be out.
And overall, do you think the DRS has enhanced or detracted from the game?
Without doubt, enhanced the game. You know, and I think there were a lot of legitimate issues early on about it undermining umpires and affecting their confidence, et cetera, et cetera. And I got that, I understood that. But I think what we've found over time, actually, is that umpires have actually come to sort of value the system as a sort of fail-safe mechanism. The last thing an umpire wants is for their decision to be the main driver in terms of the outcome of a game, especially, you know, if it's a wrong decision, that is. So I think they've got used to it. I think they quite like the balance there between giving them a little bit of latitude, but also making sure that genuine mistakes are picked up. Players are generally happier. And more than anything, we're getting more decisions right, which was obviously why it was brought in the first place.
Do you think it's reduced the incidence of batsmen coming into the dressing room and saying, well, that couldn't have been out. I was never out.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that, yes.
Less excuses, basically.
Yeah, less excuses. And also, of course, you know, I think it has also had an effect on some of that sort of outrageous appealing that you used to get and pressurising the umpires because, you know more times than not that even if you pressurise the umpire to give the decision, the guy can review it. So actually, I think in terms of behaviour on the field, it's had a positive effect as well.
So that's Andrew Strauss. And actually, I think one of the things that pleases me as an ex-bowler is that Hawkeye and DRS have actually stopped that tactic that batsmen used to use for a long time of just bat and pad together, kick the ball away. You know, often you used to say things like, did you bring your bat? And things like that, when you saw a batsman just kicking the ball away constantly outside off stump and getting away with it. So the technology has really undermined that aspect of batsmen that they've been getting away with for probably 50 years or even longer.
Also, that thing about just lunging forward, as long as you got forward against the spinners, even if it was straight and going on to hit the stumps, yeah, you were not out. It was a given, wasn't it? Oh, he's too far forward, said the umpire. They never gave it out, which is hugely frustrating for spinners. And Andrew Strauss mentioning there how it was great for Graham Swann's career and great for lots of spinners, as we mentioned in our Shane Warne podcast, how it's really helped the development of finger spin, actually kept finger spin in the game. I mean, one issue about DRS, if people say it was, is initially, and Dave Richardson said this, that the ICC, you know, it was brought in to get rid of the howler. I think one of the fascinating things about this, of course, is that, and Ian Gould touched on it, is it, in a way that's changed, hasn't it? Because it is there to get rid of really bad decisions. But actually, players don't really see it like that, I don't think. I think players see it in or out. So it's not about how bad the decision is. It's about whether the decision is correct or not. I think that is how players try to use it. Is this out or not? It might be one of those marginal ones. You often see, you know, an LBW and they go, yeah, well, let's go for it. I think this is out. And they go for it. And you see everyone really celebrating. They're not sure. They're not sure whether it's in or out, but the technology gives them the decision. So I think it's moved on from the howler, and players don't really see it like that. It's either in or it's out. There's also an entertainment factor as well with DRS. Paul Hawkins touched on it. When there is a review, everybody's watching, aren't they? It concentrates everybody's mind. Players, spectators, TV viewers, commentators. It's a big moment in the game. It's sort of a dramatic moment in the game. So in a way, although it's to some extent slowed the game up a little bit, and also you could say it's undermined the umpire's authority, what it's actually done is actually provided some real interest and talking point in the game of cricket. And the other aspect of that, and Andrew Strauss touched on it, is improved behaviour, because players now are not walking off, you know, swearing under their breath at the umpire. You know, think of Ramps at Lords in a Test match. What was it? He said to the umpire, "You're messing with my career," as he stormed off. You know, you're not getting that so much now. There will be some injustices, but they have been dramatically reduced.
You mentioned about the rejuvenation of finger spin as well, and you know, there's some stats to back that up. And the fact that DRS now gives them much more LBW opportunity, for instance, than it did in the past. So an old bowler, like a very, very accurate bowler from the 1970s, Derek Underwood, took 297 test wickets, only 8% LBWs, whereas a Graham Swann or a Rangana Harath from the modern era, orthodox finger spinners as well, hitting the pad quite consistently and getting nearly 30% of their wickets LBW, and beating the inside edge almost as important as beating the outside edge. So I think it's redressed the balance and allowed those finger spinners, a sort of traditional art, a little bit more leeway, which is good for the game generally.
So has it improved the game overall? I mean, has it improved it a little bit? Has it improved it quite a bit? Has it improved it immeasurably? Is it a massive bonus for the game, technology? I mean, there are people who still chunter about it, but is it a massive pro for the game?
Well, I think so. I think you get the right decisions more often. It stops batsmen from wandering off the pitch thinking they've been robbed and going into the dressing room and throwing their bat and saying that umpire's completely blind. And I think it's also provided tremendous entertainment for the viewers, especially the Hawkeye element, showing where the ball would have gone after it had hit the pad, so projecting into the future, and a dramatic moment as the teams review a decision. Remember that Mo and Ali getting those three wickets, that hat-trick against South Africa at the Oval, and I think each one of them, or certainly the last two, were both reviewed. And so we're waiting, not only celebrating Mo and Ali's hat-trick the first time when he was given out, the batsman, I think it was Morning Morkel, but then actually reviewing it and waiting for the review and the big sort of surge of exclamation in the crowd when it finally was declared as out. So it was a double celebration.
And what about this idea? People say the predictive element of an LBW, how accurate is that? People say, oh no, that's not going over. Even now, that's not going down the leg side. And I have to say, when DRS was first brought in, I only thought it would be brought in for things like nicks onto pads, or, you know, did it hit the glove or did it hit the arm, that sort of thing. For those sorts of decisions, I didn't envisage it being used for LBWs. But what do you say to people who say, well, you know, the Hawkeye is not as accurate as it could be or should be, or I just don't believe what I've just seen?
Well, I brought lots of viewers, spectators, into the VT truck, the videotape truck, over the years to show them Hawkeye at work. And one of the things I did to start with, in the early days of it especially, was to look at the virtual ball and then match it with the real ball and put them over the top of each other, and it always matched perfectly. Now, mathematicians will say there's no such thing as 100% certainty in maths, but there's certainly 99% certainty, and it's better than umpires' guesswork. So generally speaking, 99 times out of 100, probably 99.9 times out of 100, the technology is forensically accurate.
How many more first-class wickets or fewer first-class wickets would you have if all your games had been DRS'd?
Good question. I think probably a few. I would have got a few more because I was relatively short for a fast bowler. A lot of my deliveries weren't going over the top of the stumps, and I did bowl straight. I did bowl quite full, and I did look to hit the wicket quite a lot of the time. And I think, especially Dickie Bird, he denied me at least 10 LBWs. So, not out was the usual call. Oh, it's going down, you're going down. I bet you Hawkeye would have shown a few of those. So I might have just crept over 500 first-class wickets. I've been robbed.
It's interesting, actually, isn't it, with umpires, how not-outers are often seen as good umpires. Someone like Ray Julian, who fired them out. I mean, he was a good umpire for a bowler, but, I mean, a terrible umpire for a batsman.
And there were some as well who were just taciturn, who were sort of grumpy on the field, and you felt that they wouldn't give you anything because they just didn't like you very much. There's a sort of personality complex going on there, and that was always annoying. So, you know, that the DRS at international level anyway eliminates the sort of personality of an umpire denying you wickets. And also, actually, tail enders were always hard done by because they were always fired out because the umpire... I mean, I remember one umpire, Peter Willie, saying to me once, he gave a bloke out when there was a long delay with a last wicket stand in a county game, and he gave the batsman out, and I said, well, that wasn't out. And he said, no, I was busting for a piss. So I was desperate to get off, you know, at the end of an innings. So, I mean, it's removed, certainly at the top level, it's removed all that kind of thing. It's obviously difficult for amateur umpires to compete with the internationals with all the technology they have. But I think overall, actually, it's educated umpires and players about especially what is hitting the wicket and what isn't. And it's made generally umpiring and perception of umpiring much better.
Well, it's been a massive revolution over the years. When I think back to the 1970s and my LBW shout as a 13-year-old, which was absolutely plumb. I can still see it now. It's absolutely plumb. It was hitting middle and leg, and it was given not out. You know, that is our look at technology. One of the huge changes in the game in the last 20 years or so. Next time, we'll be looking at the batting revolution.
Yes, thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. Speak to you next week.
Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.